This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to yet another sterling edition of Taking Aim. I'm Steve Woodward, and I'm joined by David Hensley. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, everyone.
We are excited to be back in the chair here and taking aim once again. And boy, do we have a lot of targets. I think that goes without saying in the age of MAGA ascendancy, Trump 2.0. It has been quite a week of a procession of world leaders coming through the White House, probably more world leaders in one week than arrived and met at the White House during the entire 4 years of the Biden regime. Yesterday, it was on Friday. It was Vladimir Zelensky. He's coming in to kiss the ring. And prior to that, we had the Prime Minister of Great Britain and several other. Other notables as well, so it's been quite a busy week. It's also been a busy period of time for these federal judges who are all spun up about the Department of Government Efficiency. They see Elon Musk and his team as not saviors riding to the rescue to reduce wasteful spending and it'll try to start nipping away, chipping away at our federal debt. They see him as some kind of a satanic cult figure who is daring to topple the status quo. And those judges, therefore, are our public enemies number one, and in this case, two and three.
We need like a theme. We need like a. We need an intro to that. We need some intro music. We need a public enemy number one. Dun dun dun.
Or we can just let you do your thing that you just did right now.
That was dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, I like okay. that. That's right. Nice. Let's start with U.S. District Judge Jeanette Vargas in Manhattan.
That would be New York, right? New York City.
Yes.
Okay, New York City judge.
She has granted a request from 19 Democratic state attorney generals. To grant a preliminary injunction on DOGE access to the Treasury Department's records, which, of course, you know, they spend all the money. So if you're gonna try to curtail a wasteful and abusive and fraudulent spending, where do you start? I think you might want to start at the Treasury Department. And I want to say that among the attorneys general who participated in that is North Carolina's very own little. Vapid weasel Jeff Jackson, but so Judge Vargas has said that Musk's request to review Treasury payment systems would pose a risk to sensitive information that could be improperly disclosed. So that's what they're going to say about all of these inquiries. Next, we come to U.S. District Judge Adam Abelson. He has ruled that Trump's policy.
Wait, and where is Mr. Abelson from?
Mr. Abelson is based in Baltimore, Maryland.
Baltimore, okay. Yes. There's some mid-American values.
Yes, he's one of those Baltimoreans. And this federal judge has blocked President Trump's bid to eliminate federal funding from programs that incorporate, wait for it, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Mm. Those very things that have diluted our military, that have compromised our education systems, that have potentially made our commercial aviation less safe than it has been for many decades. So Judge Abelson has ruled that Trump's policy to unfund DEI penalizes private organizations based on their viewpoints. The judge said the policy is written so vaguely that it chills the free speech of federal contractors, and he's concerned that they will be punished if they don't eliminate programs that are merely meant to, what, encourage a diverse workforce. Well, there's nothing wrong with a diverse workforce as long as it's not rammed down your throat like a fire hose and, and excludes qualified people from jobs that they are qualified to hold.
Well, right. We, first of all, we need a meritocracy. That's what makes an economy great or a country great. Secondly, you know, the left's idea of diversity is always based upon superficial things such as gender or skin color or, you know, who you sleep with, right? It's never, ever, ever diversity of thought. In fact, they insist on, like, ideological purity.
Absolutely. And that's all that matters. It really honestly does not matter to them that someone is unqualified, maybe even incompetent, maybe even placing innocent people in harm's way.
Even if it causes your entire, like, Pacific Palisades to burn down.
Yeah, which
they don't care, you know, as long as they checked all the boxes. Oh, lesbian. Oh, you know, whatever, right?
Yes. And diversity even in small fish in the case of
right. I don't know why California. They, you know, I personally have adopted Dr. Martin Luther King's judging people by the content of their character, their resume, and their experience, not the color of their skin. These people are anti-Dr. King's message, by the way.
Entirely.
No one ever points that out.
Entirely.
They want people judged by the color of their skin.
Yes. And yet they insist that Black history have its own month.
Right.
Whereas we're forced to settle for Veterans Day.
Well, Veterans Day is people, everyone.
And Memorial Day.
That's everyone.
That's also true.
Right. Steve, we don't have a holiday. There is no white American Day. Act like there is, but there isn't.
Well, I think you could argue that we have 12 months to celebrate that. It's called celebrating being an American. Inclusive Americans.
Right. Everyone should celebrate being an American.
Absolutely.
Right.
That's what we do. And by the way, as we speak, now we've entered March, so I don't know who's being honored this month. Probably the
we got to get through Public Enemy Number One here.
Illegal immigrant month or something. Okay, and our third Public Enemy Number One, last but not least, a federal judge has barred the Department of Education and the Office of Personnel Management, which is the HR department for the federal government. Can you only imagine how well that functions? Those two entities have been barred from sharing sensitive information once again with Elon Musk and Doge, saying the decision to grant access appears to breach federal privacy laws. This is U.S. District Judge Deborah Boardman, also a Maryland-based appointee. She's an appointee of none other than Joe Biden. And she churned out a 33-page ruling to smack down Doge in this particular case. It is the most wide-ranging block on Doge activities to date and bars the Office of Personnel Management from sharing federal employees' personal information with Doge, like how much do you make and what do you do? Anything?
So it's not unusual, right? These are Doge people are federal employees. They're IT people, and it's not unusual for IT people who are trying to do their job, database administrators, as an example, it's not unusual for them to have access to databases. That's their job. Their job is to optimize all these systems and analyze it and look for misuse of funds. I mean, they are government employees, IT professionals doing their jobs. But anyway, they're all about to get, all these judges are about to get smacked down because there was a fourth judge who ruled against, who was trying to force the greatest of all time, President Trump, GOAT President Trump, into, you know, he stopped all that wasteful USA spending. Of course, somebody went to court. You must spend money on lesbian coloring books for the Amazon children and,
yes,
you know, gender changes for the Incas high up in the, you know, Himalaya, wherever, right?
They're all laughable if they weren't serious and wasting serious amounts of money into the billions.
Well, it turns out just the other day I was doing research, and the people who want to tear down the High Fall Dam, right? That is 100% American Rivers, Inc. They're getting federal funding specifically to tear down dams along the Cape Fear River Basin. So it's not just obscure stuff. This stuff is funding stuff that our community opposes, right? Like directly. Anyway, so Roberts, Supreme Court Justice Roberts.
John
Roberts, who's not an uber conservative, right?
No, not by a long shot.
He reached down because there was a judge that told the GOAT President Trump that you must spend this money. And the president rightfully appealed it to the trial court in D.C., right? The appellate court in D.C. just buried it. Oh, well, we can't, you know, we'll get to this next year. John Roberts, John Roberts reached down and pulled that up and said, no, that injunction is canceled, and I want everyone's brief to me by Friday. So,
which means he'll have the weekend to review.
Right.
Yes.
So my guess is, you know, the Supreme Court is about to smack down all these activist trial judges.
Yes, and I certainly think that these judges probably know that they're at best engaging in slow walking and stalling, and they're not going to get away with it. And, you know, by the way, it's important that we not overemphasize the use of the acronym USAID, because that implies that that is largely geared toward aid and relief. It's actually the Agency for International Development, which is properly vague and has been taken advantage of as such. International development has morphed into, in some cases, literally funding terrorist organizations abroad.
Well, and the money that wasn't just outright wasted in funding our enemies was cycled back to politicians. There's that senator, that Democrat senator, his wife has a foundation that got, $131 million in grants?
Yes.
And she herself got paid a couple million dollars from that foundation?
Yes.
That's not a theory. That might happen. Sitting U.S. senator.
Isn't that Sheldon Whitehouse?
Yes, who has a foundation that him and his wife owns that got, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in grants from USAID, and she personally got paid millions of dollars.
It's not the first time we've heard about Sheldon's wife. She also was the fall guy for him when they discovered that he was a member of an all-white private club. In Rhode Island, I believe.
The hypocrisy. Don't get me started on the hypocrisy of Democrats. But anyway, here's the point. I guarantee you, when the dust settles, you know, this is both sides of the aisle, and it's a significant number of career politicians.
And I thought it was interesting that this wrist wringing and pearl clutching about USAID has even come to the fore here locally in our favorite fake newspaper, The Pilot. In back-to-back editions, they had guest columnists ranting about what a travesty it is that all this aid around the world provided by this bogus organization is going to be rescinded, and all this suffering is going to commence. And in fact, the first column was written by an ex.
We should save this for Pravda in the Pines.
Yeah. So the military, a retired military officer writes a column ranting about it.
Probably a colonel.
And then a former editor of The Pilot, now a guest columnist, Steve Bowser, follows up with his second column about the travesty of the assault on USAID. And he was so light on material that he had to use the last third of his column to quote the previous columnist. So that was kind of comical, but not unusual for the lazy pilot.
Look, they all know who's paying them. They all know where the money's coming from.
So once again, we have managed to root out some public enemies, and of course, we always have to start with about a list as long as your arm, because
right.
That's how many there are to choose from in any given week. And so we threw in our runner-up just now, Sheldon Whitehouse. So that was good.
Well, this week it goes to the trial activist judges who are trying to strike down the constitutional and well thought out positions of the greatest of all, President Trump's.
Yes, with a reality check that yes, there is really a $36 billion federal debt, and it's real money, and we have to figure out a way to eliminate it eventually. Let's move on to what you might have missed during the past week. You know, the news cycle is like a blur. I was describing the parade of world leaders through the White House. There was also the announcement by the fabulously competent White House Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt that the White House Correspondents Association has been deemed bogus and no longer will be recognized as the governing body of who gets access to press coverage of the White House. A beautiful moment.
Long overdue. I mean, the American Press Club was just the good old boy network of the legacy media. It doesn't contain media that people actually listen to anymore.
That's correct. And you know, there may have been a day when members of that White House Correspondents Organization were legitimate journalists who were serious-minded, who were ethical, and perhaps it was correct to allow them to pick and choose who got press credentials, but not any longer, and that was a good way to kick off the week. But there was some great action from Team Trump. It is sort of like the Avengers. You know, they just swoop in. They're nominated. They're confirmed. And like on day two, you know, they did, the day one they used to, you know, fire a bunch of people who don't have anything to do. And then on day two, they get to work. Tulsi Gabbard, new director of the National Intelligence Agency.
Yes, former Democrat.
Former Democrat. Wore the uniform, a member of Congress from Hawaii.
Yeah, not just a Democrat, but like a former Democrat congressperson from Hawaii.
Correct. Elected Democrat.
Right.
From Hawaii. Where there are apparently no Republicans. Tulsi Gabbard is now in charge of the intelligence community, essentially. And what comes to light? That you had hundreds, potentially, of Intel employees, federal employees, using secure chat platforms.
Yeah, they were using the top secret SCI network, like the highest of high classified networks, to do this.
And they weren't running like rotisserie baseball leagues or comparing favorite recipes for chili.
What were they doing?
They were having graphic discussions about their transgender journeys, about their transitions, about how much they were enjoying being rid of certain appendages
and the usage of their new.
And of their new equipment, yeah, their factory upgrades, and they were doing this on government time.
Factory changes, not upgrades.
Yes, they were doing all of this on government time using government secure platforms. Yeah. So, what did Tulsi do? Let's go to clip one.
There are over 100 people from across the intelligence community that contributed to and participated in this. What is really just an egregious violation of trust, what to speak of like basic rules and standards around professionalism. I put out a directive today that they all will be terminated and their security clearances will be revoked. But the thing here, Jesse, is that we got to take a step back because this is just barely scratching the surface. When you see what these people were saying, and thanks to Chris Rufo for putting it all out online, they were brazen in using an NSA platform intended for professional use to conduct this kind of really, really horrific behavior. And they were brazen in doing this because when was the last time anyone was really held accountable? Certainly not over the last 4 years, certainly not over the last 10, maybe 20 years. When we look at some of the biggest violations of the American people's trust in the intelligence community. So today's action in holding these individuals accountable is just the beginning of what we're seeing across the Trump administration, which is carrying out the mandate the American people gave him. Clean house, root out that rot and corruption and weaponization and politicization so we can start to rebuild that trust in these institutions that are charged with an important mission of serving the American people, ensuring our safety, security, and freedom.
So let me jump right out here by saying that, you know, tying it to our previous thing, Chris Rufo should be part of the White House press corps. But instead, they previously had this White House correspondence thing who would have, you know, ABC, Reuters. Why did ABC not break this? Why did Reuters not break this? Why is it a new journalist from the new media breaking
and
these things?
And why does it have to be James O'Keefe all right. the time?
Yeah, so look, I welcome stuff. Chris Rufo to the White House press corps.
And by the way, Rufo is best known for being one of the original investigative reporters who uncovered the scam of diversity, equity, inclusion in education. He was the lead independent journalist on getting that ball rolling. So he is a man of many talents, and once again, he has proven to be a valuable patriotic, independent journalist, the kind of which we need many more of. You know, so while DOGE is uncovering the wasteful spending and ineptitude and sort of overall incompetence at the federal level, the other members of the Trump team are exposing how many complete fanatical, hysterical morons there are among our citizenry in the aftermath of the November 5 elections, and certainly in the aftermath of January 20th and the inauguration of the 47th president. That came into focus very clearly in the past week when a very deranged young woman, I almost feel sorry for her, who goes by the handle Sarah C. Roberts on TikTok, she decided from the comfort of her cozy, probably, $10,000 a month Manhattan apartment to take to TikTok and post her deep inner feelings about, one, Elon Musk and what she thinks his fate should be, and then her disdain for the Internal Revenue Service and the responsibility of American citizens to pay our taxes. Let's go to clip two.
Elon Musk. Like, we need to X him. And by X, I mean formerly known as assassination. And it's one of them, if you guys show up, I don't arrest me. You don't have enough people to even investigate me at this point. I haven't filed my taxes in like 8 years. And yet,
tax evasion.
No one's covered me.
So Elon, I had to cut the sound there because she immediately dropped an F-bomb right after that. Or I would have let that run a little longer because it's very entertaining to listen to somebody this completely deranged. I dare say she may have been a little over-medicated at the time as well. But so Elon's, somebody shares this with Elon. I don't know how he has time to cover all this ground, but somebody shares this with Elon. He posts it to X Twitter and alerts the U.S. Attorney Ed Martin.
Right, who immediately
responds and thanks him and pledges that we're going to be quote unquote on it, end quote. So Sarah C. Roberts, even as we speak, potentially
right after announcing income tax evasion for 8 years, the U.S. attorney responds noted.
And wouldn't it be won't it be hilarious when it comes to light that her source of income was the U.S. Agency for International Development.
And and on top of that, she didn't pay income tax on it.
Right. So she was getting paid for bogus jobs federally funded and wasn't paying the income tax. And now, of course, even more egregiously, has called for the assassination of a fellow citizen. Good luck with Sarah C. Now, it's the lunacy also is coast to coast. We go now to San Francisco, where you may recall that another one of Elon's moves was to email federal employees and ask them to comply with a very simple request, which is, please respond to this email and tell me 5 things that you did while on the job in the past week.
5 things?
Outline your accomplishments.
Five things you did. In bullet format, just like boom, boom, boom.
Right.
Boom. Oh my God, the hardship.
No book reports or essays. Just 5 bullet points on what did you do last week? Can you name 5 things? And
the struggle is real.
And so this caused a cranial nationwide explosion of heads, a cranial episode of mass destruction such as we've never seen. One of these snowflakes was so aggrieved by this that instead of taking the 10 minutes to respond to the email, she took the time to figure out how to get in touch with CNN, the commie news network, so that she could go to the airwaves, go on camera, and express how utterly appalled and devastated she was to receive this email from Elon Musk. Let's play clip three.
MT, thanks for being with us. And I just wonder here, first, just tell us about this email and what it was like receiving it and what you all have talked about after getting it.
Sure. I got this email Saturday afternoon about 3 p.m. and I felt absolutely infuriated getting this email with a demand within 48 hours to provide a response on what I did within the last week or face termination. This is clearly an attempt from Elon Musk to harass and bully and intimidate the federal workforce, which is part of his broader plan to gut the federal workforce and privatize public sector services to ensure that corporations like his own can get more profit.
Hmm. That's an interesting leap from justify your job to help me leverage my position as Doge chief to make more profit.
Yeah. So I got two thoughts on this. First, I want to point out two outright lies and distortions, right? So first of all, she said, I got it at 3 p.m. Saturday and I have less than 48 hours to respond. Okay. So the deadline was noon on Monday, wherever you're at, noon on Monday. With the presumption is you go to work, you know, you get there at 8 a.m. and within 4 hours you can fire off five bullets, right? So, you know, she didn't say, oh, it was due within 48 hours. It was due halfway through your first day back at work, right? So that's just complete distortion. It's like she works for the pilots, like she works for John. It's like John Nagy writing an editorial, right? The second thing is, she talked about, as you alluded to, privatization of government. There's been no discussion about hiring contractors to replace these functions of these terminated employees. Quite the opposite. The Trump administration saying the federal government's getting, if it is not mandated, if it's a function not mandated by law, we are cutting it. They're not replacing these people.
Correct.
You know, Elon Musk isn't starting a new division of Tesla to provide, you know, robots to the U.S. Well, maybe he is, but, you know, but anyway, look, the point is no one's talking about privatizing these positions. They're talking about eliminating the functions of government and not replacing the people. That's the idea.
That's correct. And one of the reasons these, and by the way, this woman's name, she went by the initials MT. I figured out that probably means maniacal twit.
Well, let me. So there's two other things to talk about this lady. You know, oh, just random government employee, right? CNN, just random government employee shows up at CNN, right?
Kind of a liberal use of the word lady, I might say.
Well, yes, random federal employee shows up,
yes.
Right? Anyway, so, well, let's talk about her job. First of all, she works for the National Labor Relations Board, which is uber liberal. Secondly, if that's not enough that she works for the National Labor Relations Board, she is also a union organizer. She said that. That's part of her titles. I'm a union organizer. So CNN didn't say, you know, they acted like it was just a random government employee. They didn't say National Labor Relations Board member and union organizer, MT, you know, maniacal twit.
Yes. That's exactly right. And, you know, one of the reasons that people like this and many hundreds and thousands of them are so melting down about losing their jobs or potentially losing their jobs if they don't answer simple email requests is that they know, speaking of the private sector, that there's no jobs for them in the real world.
Right.
They don't have a skill set to bring to a job interview. So they're kind of, you know, what's the word? Scrod, I think is the word of. anyway, that's the cleaned up word there. But yeah, they are in bad shape. And you know, this the other thing that ties into this is not only are they incapable of telling you what they do every day when they work, a lot of them don't actually make it out of their dwellings to go to work. And this has been shown in with the arrival of some of these new Trump administrators, Lee Zeldin at the Environmental Protection Agency and Kelly Loeffler at the Small Business Administration. Right. They, on day one, they went in and said, okay, I want to know what the attendance figures are like in these headquarters, EPA and SBA. Who comes to work? And Lee Zeldin discovered that the average was like 5 to 8% Mondays and Fridays and no better than 10% midweek. So that was literally the average of, you know, in other words, most of the offices were empty. Right. Kelly Loeffler, when she went to visit her new office at the SBA headquarters in D.C., she took a camera crew with her, and they walked up and down the corridors of where all these cubicles are. They were all empty.
Yep.
I mean, you could have shot multiple cannons through there. You could have unleashed one of those 10-ton bombs that
Moab,
that we send over to Israel. Yeah, and it would have not caused one flesh wound. So she, of course, mandates with the help of Musk and Donald Trump that these people need to come back to work ASAP.
Right.
So that was like on a Friday.
Yep.
On Monday, she comes into the office, 80% capacity. They're all back. But they literally have not been there for the better part of 4 years since the onset of the Wuhan virus.
They all had to quit their additional jobs they got.
But Kelly Loeffler is, I believe she ran for Senate in Georgia in one of those special elections. She's a very accomplished businesswoman. She's now heading the SBA. Here's what she has to say about her new role.
On the first day of President Trump's return to office mandate, and after having only 20% in the office attendance on Friday, 80% of her staff was back in the office yesterday. SBA head Kelly Loeffler joins us now. Good morning to you, Administrator Loeffler.
Good morning, Ainsley.
Good
great to
morning.
Be with you.
Well, great to see you. I was shocked over the weekend when I saw that video. Everyone, all the desks were empty. No computers. There were nothing was even on the desk. That just shows you how long they have been working from home. So everyone was back yesterday. What was that like? And what was the reaction from the workers?
Well, Ainsley, I can tell you what it was like on Friday. It was like there were tumbleweeds blowing through the office. There were still tags left on desk chairs. And it was my first full day at the agency, and I was so excited to be able to meet people. And to not find anyone there was disappointing. To have 80% of the people back yesterday was amazing, to be able to shake hands. And what's happening is Americans are seeing that they have been paying for empty office buildings, for do-nothing bureaucrats. That ends now. We are going to get this federal government back to work thanks to President Trump's return to work order. And we can expect no less of this administration. We're going to work hard to do that every day.
Well, that's encouraging. And you better believe it. These people mean business. Trump went out and picked stellar people. In fact, as the week was concluding, Linda McMahon was on the verge of being confirmed as head of the Department of Education with the task of doing, guess what, eliminating the Department of Education.
They could just appoint me,
which is
I could do that.
And then of course they'll find something else for Linda McMahon to do, probably still in the realm of education reform, because that's one of her
I'm sorry to interrupt, but let's go back to this small business thing. So
if you interrupt me again, I'm going on TikTok and I'm going to call for your assassination. I'm sorry.
Okay. No, I just. So, how many state workers are still telecommuting? I bet a bunch. I mean, you wonder why the DMV isn't functional.
Absolutely.
I mean, has anyone asked how many state workers work from home? And what about? Does Sand Hill still have people working from home? Have you asked?
I don't know that's the case, but I do know that there is quite a bit of student activity involving remote learning still, because they've kind of gotten they kind of like that. You know, it's like, oh, why should I drive in?
You
know?
Yeah, I guarantee you there's still tons of state workers telecommuting.
Well, if we had a responsible governor or attorney general,
bring them back to work.
We could ask them and they would go and find out and get an answer to our question, and then they would remedy it.
Yeah.
But under the circumstances with Josh Stein and Jeff Jackson, I have to be very careful when I say Jackson because I always want to change their pronunciation.
They don't care about worker productivity. They don't care that the DMV is completely dysfunctional and you can't get an appointment because, you know, they're all shut down. They don't care.
Of course not. They do care, however, about their next fundraiser.
Right.
And their,
next elected office as they fail upwards, as all Democrats do.
And their next fawning interview on WRAL and the like. So that's
well, fell up. I mean, that's what Kamala did. She failed upwards.
It's up to us, David. We're going to have to get the answer for next week.
Right. Okay.
And we'll come back with that.
Investigative journalism.
Now, so you might say to yourself, well, you know, this is all very well and fine for the conservatives, the people who want this country to run more efficiently, who want to see our debt reduced, who want to stop the abuse of these federal agencies. You might say, that's fine, but what about all these people on the other side? Surely they're not happy about what's going on. And I would say, oh no, but you are so wrong. And that was brought to light last week when Harvard Harris, not exactly a right-wing operation, released the results of a poll that they undertook asking questions about Donald Trump, his presidency, all in the aftermath of his inauguration. Well, for one thing, he has a 53% approval rating, which anyone who's studied presidential history knows that any president that's ever over 50%, that's pretty remarkable. Even Barack Obama and Bill Clinton has as much media adoration as they had, did not always maintain that threshold.
Give him another month, Trump will be in the 90s.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, maybe pushing 60, but yeah, because there's still plenty of other lunatics out there. But that wasn't the key number of that poll. That wasn't the key metric. What was really revealing is what the poll told us about public sentiment about these other issues that are front and center with the Trump administration. Get this one. 81% support the deportation of illegal immigrants who have committed crimes. 81%.
Wow.
That means there's a lot of Democrats who are now realizing that having, you know, tens of millions of illegal immigrants roaming the homeland is not really feasible and not sustainable. 76% support eliminating fraud and waste in government expenditures. Again, three quarters of those surveyed. Another 76% support the very basic common sense idea of closing the southern border. These were the top three most supported policies, all things that Trump ran on, all things that Kamala Harris wouldn't touch in any way except with some word salad response.
And all things that the Democrat Party's trying their best to keep.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
They're trying to keep illegal. They're trying to.
Absolutely.
You know, the Democrat coalition is the 19% of people who think that illegal, criminal illegal aliens should stay here.
Yes, and, right. And no matter how many young people, mostly women, were being raped and murdered by these criminals from Venezuelan gangs, Honduran gangs, Costa Rican gangs, Mexican gangs, the death toll couldn't get high enough for them to see the light and change their thinking about it.
Let Pelosi and Schumer keep parading out defending that. Let them keep defending reckless spending.
Yeah, yeah, and they will to their grave. Here's a topic we could do an entire program on in the future, and maybe we will. 55% support birthright citizenship for children of illegal immigrants. So that's interesting that that number is still above 50% supporting birthright citizenship, because there is no constitutional basis for that, and it needs to stop.
That is that 55% who support that, that's an educational thing. That's because they've all been told that it's in the Constitution when in fact it's not in the Constitution. There's never been a case that's addressed this. The Supreme Court case everyone points to is like 150 years old. The parents were like here legally. It was completely different circumstances.
And to your point, the survey addressed that. not only does they get 55% supporting birthright, but of that group, 63% said they believe it is a requirement of the Constitution.
Right. And if those 63% were properly educated, then 81% would oppose birthright citizenship. We're the only country in the world that does that. And it's 100% based upon miseducation.
And again, this is a Harris-Harvard University poll. This is not Fox News. This is not, you know, Real Clear Politics. This is
the Woodward News Service.
This is not the Hensley Woodward. No, this is not. Here's two more that were very notable in this survey, which I think are worth mentioning. 67% of voters say the current level of U.S. federal government debt is unsustainable. I don't know what the other 33% are doing or where their heads are lodged, but But here's the one that really jumped off the page at me, and we were talking about this earlier. 70% of voters in this survey believe the government should make hiring decisions based on merit and objective evaluation rather than in order to achieve the big D word, diversity. So once again, another tolling of the death bell for DEI, which will soon be DOA, dare I say. Now let's move on because we're running out of time and we still got a lot of good stuff here. I'm going to skip over this one because I don't know. I think Trump has already sort of dismissed this, but a great American, Eric Prince, who's got a private security organization called Blackwater.
Former owner of Blackwater.
Former owner of Blackwater. He has proposed.
Founder of Blackwater.
Founder.
Yeah, he's got a new private security firm.
And he had a great idea, I thought. He proposed forming a private army, privately monetized army, with the goal of deporting up to 12 million illegal immigrants. Trump was asked about that in one of his like 15 press conferences last week, and literally one a day, two a day. And he said, well, that's a very nice offer, but I think we'll be fine. I think we can do it on our own, which, you know, that's a vote of confidence, obviously, for his own people, which is appropriate. To Tom Lohman, is it? And the new Department of Homeland Security, the lovely and talented Kristi Noem,
yep,
former governor of South Dakota.
So just so I'm consistent, just so you know, when I heard those numbers, 25 billion and 12 million, I pulled out the calculator. That is, Eric Prince was offering to deport to their home country every single, well, 12 million illegal aliens at a cost of $2,083 per illegal alien.
That sounds like a good kind of a good value added, doesn't it?
Maybe rather than fly them back, we could use barges and reduce, you know, put them on trains to go to ports and load them on barges and maybe get it down to, say, $650 a head.
Yeah, barges would be fine.
Right.
Or maybe Carnival cruise ships.
There you go. Yes. They could have like the dancing cruise. Are we having fun?
Carnival cruise ships are kind of like barges with like
right.
bars.
They're well painted. They're barges painted white.
Cruise ships with complimentary alcohol. And what could possibly go wrong? But hey, now we get to do something that's always a lot of fun in this crazy world. We get to look ahead. And boy, is there a lot on the horizon. I'm squinting. There's so much I can't take it all in. I thought that it was very interesting that on February 28th, last week, the U.S. Department of Education's deadline, which had been 14 days, which basically imposed on federally funded educational institutions, so that's your public schools, that's your universities, your community colleges, other centers of learning and higher learning and deranged learning, that deadline has come and gone. We now need to keep a close eye on the next steps by the U.S. Department of Education, especially with the aforementioned Linda McMahon coming in as head of it. And also, you may recall that ahead of the Department of Education's ruling or request or demand, mandate, that Trump in the early days had issued an executive order threatening the removal of federal funding from agencies that did not remove the extremely controversial and toxic DEI programs and requirements and funding for employees who are assigned to promote and sustain DEI. And so we've got those two. That's kind of a double barrel pointed right at it. And now we need to watch and see, you know, do they start lawyering up to protect what they seem to think are their rights to maintain these bogus diversity programs? We'll have to look into that.
I just think it's great that the GOAT president, Trump, is using the Civil Rights Division to send letters to educational opportunities saying, based upon Supreme Court precedent, you cannot discriminate. So, you know, the leftists who've been using the Civil Rights Division to, like, beat everybody over the head and get their way for generations is now learning that the discriminatory practices that they've adopted in the past now have the eye of an unbiased U.S. Department of Justice and their Civil Rights Division. And I look forward to the lawsuits from the Civil Rights Division of both the U.S. Department of Education and the U.S. Department of Justice going after these educational look at Duke University. Duke University, defended by Josh Stein, went all the way to the Supreme Court and got smacked down because they were trying to defend their racial admissions practices.
UNC Chapel Hill.
I'm sorry, I misspoke.
They were smacked down mightily by the Supreme Court, and that, of course, you know. So you've got the affirmative action was really the forefather of DEI,
yeah.
And so you're seeing it by whatever name you want to call it. It is dying on the vine. I think you can also expect to see some action up in Raleigh in the North Carolina legislature. Our very own Representative Neil Jackson, who represents portions of Moore County, has joined other fellow Republicans to co-sponsor House Bill 171, which will ban diversity, equity, and inclusion programs and policies in state agencies, statewide agencies. So that is a step in the right direction, which is sort of they're sort of drafting off of the momentum at the federal level. I think that's a very timely bill. But of course, what happens now? Well, you get your Democrats up in Raleigh. They are beside themselves about what's going to happen to them. It's sort of like this USAID that all of a sudden there's going to be mass worldwide starvation if we curtail the spending there. Well, in Thursday of last week, a group of Black North Carolina lawmakers, this reported in the Raleigh News and Observer, they blasted Neil Jackson's bill, co-sponsored with others, seeking to ban DEI, with one senator saying that he was worried that he would be, quote, impeached from office because I'm Black. Really? Let's calm down there, okay?
Wait. Senator, like a state senator?
Yeah. She
senators can't be impeached.
A Greenville Democrat who chairs the North Carolina Legislative Black Caucus said, quote, if I'm teaching anybody about how I grew up, what I learned in life, as far as me and my ancestors, I can be impeached, said Candy Smith of Greenville.
That's not what
Of course
not.
True. Of course not. The bill is sponsored by, among others, House Majority Leader Brendan Jones, a sign that it may move quickly through the legislature. He says the bill upholds equal opportunity and ensures employment and contracts are based on qualifications, not quotas. But don't tell that to the legislative Black caucus.
Does the bill say somewhere where you cannot teach history?
No, of course not.
So that lady's just, that senator's just outright lying and misrepresenting what the bill says.
A Chapel Hill Democrat named Alan Buonsi suggested that anti-DEI efforts were a smokescreen to distract from issues like higher costs and massive cuts to the federal workforce. He says, to put it plainly, people and families right now are hurting in North Carolina. Well, who's been the governor for the last 8 years? A Democrat. Who did you just reelect as the governor again? A Democrat.
Right.
So if they're hurting, Why don't you point your finger where it should be instead of and get it out of you know where?
And people are hurting because of the high inflation caused by the runaway government spending, where the Biden administration literally from day one he was in office increased the federal budget $2 trillion.
Exactly, which is a tax on the working class.
And the Republicans are trying to fix it by reducing federal spending, and this guy's talking about the suffering caused by Democrats.
Well, he's a Chapel Hill Democrat. That's right. All you need to know. Yeah. He goes on to say, he calls the House Bill 171 an attack. He said, these attacks that my colleagues have called out are just a ruse and a mask for efforts to cut jobs and to freeze or cut federal funding for critical research and programming that saves lives. That's what they always come back to. If you cut one dime of any kind of state or federal funding,
there went the cure for cancer.
You're killing people. Are dropping like there's a plague, like another black
bring
plague.
Out your dead.
Bring out your dead. Yes, exactly.
You know, come on, look. When you first heard of COVID, right? Like, oh my God, horrible pandemic. I literally pictured this. You know, bring out your dead. And you know, everyone kind of feared that and ran into your house. But after a couple weeks of looking around, you're like, not a lot of people dying, you know.
They're not even ill.
Right.
Except the ones that are mentally ill, and they were all staying in their homes because they wouldn't leave.
Well, there still are mentally ill people.
It turns out they found a guy who would have fit right in with Monty Python. His name was Dr. Anthony Fauci. But that's a whole other story. Another bill to keep an eyeball on is brewing in the North Carolina Senate, and it has a very simple objective. It would forbid, at Senate Bill 58, it would remove Attorney General Jeff Jackson, Democrat, his ability to challenge federal executive orders, which he's been doing right and left since Trump was inaugurated. The new bill would forbid the North Carolina AG from acting to file an action or advance any argument challenging the validity of an executive order by the President of the United States. It adds a provision that prohibits the AG from seeking to invalidate any act of the Carolina General Assembly, which was passed last year after Jackson was elected. So, and then, of course, you've got Democrats saying, well, I mean, you know, if you're going to handcuff the state attorney general, keep in mind that someday he might be your state attorney general. It might be a Republican. How are you going to feel about it then? And you know what I say? I feel fine about it. I think limiting the ability of a state attorney general not to focus on his job and the people of North Carolina, but instead to be running off to the microphones, joining other lunatic left-wing attorneys general to file bogus, stupid lawsuits to thwart executive orders by the president.
Yeah.
That is not the proper role of an attorney
general. What I want is an attorney general who's going to solve crime problems and corruption problems and convict criminals in the state of North Carolina. Why I didn't elect an attorney general to be like an activist, against a duly elected popular president. I elected an attorney general to enforce the laws within the state of North Carolina.
Yeah, well, I didn't exactly vote for the guy, by the way, but
I voted for the much more
competent Dan Bishop.
Right.
But in our final couple of minutes, I think we ought to address what will probably be a big story in the week ahead, which is the further release of the long-held secret files regarding the life and times of Jeffrey Epstein. Yeah. We got round one as the week concluded. That was sort of a dud because it was material that had already been sort of out there.
Yeah, the deep state withheld information from the attorney general. I mean, she asked for it, and the previous FBI director just gave her 200 documents and withheld thousands of other documents.
So now Pam Bondi has... She's the attorney general. Cash Patel is now in as the director of the FBI. With those two working side by side, I would imagine that the Epstein story is going to be fully blown out of the water by sometime
next
week.
My guess is the timing of this was carefully done because they knew that people would try to withhold him. So this will give Cash Patel an excuse to fire everybody in the Southern District of New York.
David? We've done it once again. We have covered a wide swath of material. We have brought the left to its knees. We have invigorated patriotic, red-blooded Americans who are ready to dive into the week ahead with the full force and momentum of the MAGA movement. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. And guess what we're going to do next week? We're going to come back and do it all again when we will be taking aim.